Buddhism really encourages anyone to be themselves. I might be a homosexual, but it does not matter. Anybody can be enlightened.
Welcome to Crazy Smart Asia, the unexpected stories of Asia's disruptors. I'm your host, Chong Xiaowei. Every week, we talk with a young leader about the crazy smart approaches they're taking to achieve success and tackle some of the biggest issues facing Asia today. A Zen vibe often seems like the answer to many of life's challenges. But when your fridge is empty, your laundry basket's full, and you've got to be up tomorrow at the crack of dawn, meditation often slides to the bottom of the to-do list. Growing up queer in a Buddhist temple in Japan, this week's guest has ridden the highs and lows of feeling different from those around him. And for entrepreneurs, I'm sure you can relate to the feeling of being the black sheep. If you're going through an internal battle or feeling like the odd one out, this episode is here to explore why embracing who you truly are is the first step towards finding freedom. On self-acceptance, inclusivity, spirituality, queer liberation, and Disney princesses, here's author, makeup artist, and Buddhist monk, Kodo Nishimura. Here's our conversation.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, Kodo. Welcome to Crazy Smart Asia. So glad to see you here. How are you doing today?
Thank you. I'm doing great.
That's very cool.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for joining us. So we're going to kick off with some quick fire questions as usual. The very first question is, can you describe what you do in one sentence?
Oh, I think I am a Disney princess trapped in a male monk's body.
That's cool. Do you have a favorite Disney princess?
I like Jasmine because she's fierce and she... You know, she grew up in a castle, which is a little bit similar to me because I grew up in a temple also and I felt trapped.
And what is your favorite Buddhist saying?
It's a sin to lie to yourself.
And final question is, what's the best advice you've ever received?
My mom told me, somebody tell you how to live your life, but if you follow them and fail, people are not going to take responsibilities for what they told you. So follow your heart only.
I like that. Your mom has very wise words. So Kodo, let's start from the very beginning. Growing up, can you share what was your childhood like? And were there any formative experiences that shaped you as an adult?
I think when I was younger, I used to feel very inferior of myself because of my sexuality. In the 90s that I grew up in Japan, LGBTQ people were extremely discriminated, especially in media. I loved watching animes like Sailor Moon or One Piece, but whenever I see LGBTQ characters, they were portrayed as villains or perverted. Mm. And I don't know if you know Crayon Shin-chan, but
I do. I used to watch the cartoon.
Yeah. And Shin-chan kind of harasses his friend by trying to kiss him or being kind of, clingy. And the Katama-kun, the boy, gets so annoyed because of this kind of homosexual, actions that he kind of simulates in the anime. So automatically I felt that if I were to show affection to other boys or if I tried to wear something that was traditionally meant for women, then I would be considered as perverted or villain. So I really had a tough time trying to express myself. But when I was in high school, I watched some movies from the US, started listening to American music. And I felt that in the US, people talk about racism or poverty or discrimination, and it's okay. So I moved to the US at the age of 18. And when I moved to New York, I met so many LGBTQ individuals who inspired me that it's okay to wear makeup and own our sexuality. Yeah. So little by little, by traveling, I was able to understand that what was normal before was not a universal normal, that there are many normals and values around the world. And I was able to install a little bit more of a global mindset and became more confident of myself.
I see. So you mentioned that your family runs a temple, right? What was that kind of upbringing like?
Yes. Well, I was respected by the members who come visit the temples, and I was expected to be the heir, which was very, very uncomfortable because I really wanted to grow my hair like Ariel or Jasmine. But shaving my head was expected, and I had to do it if I were to become a Buddhist monk and join the monk training. So I was like, this is never going to happen. I'm not going to let you decide my destiny just because I was born in a temple. So I felt very uncomfortable. But at the same time, I was living in a somewhat abundant, financially stable environment. So that allowed me to go to the US, and we didn't have a huge financial problems thanks to that temple. So I think it's the pros and cons.
So you have actually embraced monkhood now. What actually caused that change that you decided to go back into what your family's been doing?
When I was in New York, I went to Parsons School of Design. It's an art school. And there were so many students from around the world, coming from Myanmar, Costa Rica, Puerto Rico, Dubai, everywhere. And every student expressed themselves in an art using their culture or background. And I felt that in order to be successful in a global setting, I have to really delve into what's unique about me. And I was born in a temple, but I didn't know what Buddhism was about. I didn't know how it is to become a Buddhist monk. So in order to grow and in order to fortify myself and get all the answers that I had, I decided to join the monk training.
Oh, okay. So you've been described as the monk who wears makeup. You have a book called This Monk Wears Heels. So you're a spiritual leader who is also a professional makeup artist who has done work with Miss Universe, and you've also done work at the New York Fashion Week. So you've said that you're both ancient and trendy. You subvert the norms. But in a world that wants to shape us all into the same images, how have you done that? How have you subvert the norms?
I wanted to wake up people that I kept seeing women being placed in a subordinate positions when I was in Japan, and LGBTQ people pushed aside or ostracized from society. And that was not okay with me. And if I were to follow the lifestyles that society tells us to lead, I will never be able to change the injustice that I can't stand with. So since young, I knew that this world, it's very controlling, like the power really tries to take our options and opportunities away. So I felt that it is my responsibility to fortify myself, prepare myself, and give like a path for other people so that they can also follow their hearts and desires. When I kept seeing women being asked to serve tea at the temples just because they're women, or people who didn't get educations not being respected fairly, these were not okay. And I kept watching like scandals by politicians, and I felt that many things are corrupt. I was not doing anything wrong to be a homosexual wearing makeup. So yes, the society may find me unusual or absurd, but there is nothing wrong if you really think about it. And I really wanted to spark this curiosity in other people that what they are trying to do, or what they want to do, or what they want to say might not be a huge problem. It's just, it's not what society wants to hear, but there are many things that needs to be talked about, and it's okay to do this. And I want to really demonstrate how to do that because I was born with courage somehow.
So when you decided to do that, to actually stand up for what you believe in and to stand out, right? At that point in time, do you feel like you've already accepted who you are?
I was able to accept myself from like the beginning, but I wasn't really sure if others would accept me for who I was. And I needed validations and explanations and proofs to prove my worth. And going to Europe, New York, meeting LGBTQ professors who told me of Parsons who are excellent, learning the history of LGBTQ people, making friends who suffered similar discriminations. They really fortified me, and I was able to say, okay, these people also have the similar situations in the history LGBTQ people exist. Yeah. And we know that LGBTQ people were ostracized because of the war or religious values. And I was able to, and I felt ready to explain this to anybody. So that's how I became more out publicly. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to really kind of play with the image of a Buddhist monk, where Buddhist monks are usually always respected and seen as somebody who is higher a position. And LGBTQ people who are usually looked down upon and discriminated. If I were to combine these two and present myself, I'm really going to confuse a lot of people. So that was my tactic to kind of protect myself, because if you are in a lower position, you have to kind of go about strategy and present yourself in a smart way so that you will gain attention.
But I guess before that also, being in the public eye can be quite uncomfortable, right? Have you ever felt uncomfortable with being so publicly known or recognized?
Well, since when I was young, I felt that I have to be the representation. So I brought myself to be ready to be a public figure. But of course, I was once working for Miss Universe in Thailand, and I went to a toilet and I didn't have a towel, and there were no like paper towels or like the air dryer. So I was about to flick my hands, and suddenly a security guard who came into the toilet, looked at me and said, "Oh, you are the makeup artist for Miss Universe." And I was like, I didn't know what to do with my wet hands. And so I was like, just smiley. So in these moments, I can be quite uncomfortable.
Okay.
Yeah.
What about a day in your life? How does a day in your life look like, actually? And what are you most proud about, what you've achieved so far?
Oh, thank you. For me, every day is like kind of like juggling. For me, it's maybe doing talk shows at temples, or doing makeup, or speaking about LGBTQ rights. So whatever that comes, I try to do with my best focus. And I do a lot of interviews. Sometimes I travel, I teach makeup, and it's really, really rewarding. In March, I'm invited to speak at Harvard Divinity School.
Ooh.
So I'm very excited to, because I started my US journey, I moved to Boston when I was 18. So I haven't been back since many, many years. So when I was in Boston, I would go to Harvard just as a tourist. And now I'm invited and I can go into the buildings. And I was requested for my content of personality and achievements. Mm. So I'm very proud, and I'm aspiring to do my beyond my best.
Amazing. That sounds great. So do you think there is a shift going on in terms of the rising popularity of spirituality and meditation?
Yes. I think people are now finding their own way of spirituality, how to center themselves, either by meditating or sitting, or maybe listening to music or doing yoga. And I would like to kind of liberate everyone by saying that meditation does not have to be a torturous patience that you have to think of nothing and just be still, because there are many, many ways that you can kind of center yourself. I also recommend writing your thoughts on notebook, just as it comes. Or maybe you can be talking to a therapist or counselor or healer or somebody who heals you. So I think we are finding more ways to kind of meditate and center ourselves. So I'm really happy that people are not afraid to take care of their mental health.
And why do you think there is such a rise in popularity in meditation or journaling or taking care of our mental health?
Oh, I think because of COVID, people started to reflect themselves more. The values are changing that, you know, we are in the era of wind before we were in era of the earth. I don't know if you follow astrology, but...
No, I don't.
Astrology tells us that the values of the population of the earth keep changing. One time people want to accumulate their wealth, compete for status. And the next time it will be about sharing and maybe compassion and something sustainable. So it kind of denies what was happening before, just like fashion trends. You know, sometimes we do something to a maximum limit and exceed, and people start kind of negating what was popular before, saying, oh, that's old. This is what we have to focus now. So these kind of fluidity has become a little bit more of a focus. And I think it also encouraged our mental health, because before it was maybe better to hide that we are weak. And now it's okay to share our vulnerabilities and connect with people. And it's not only about competition, but feeling peaceful inside and out. So I think this shift is because of the course of humanity.
So earlier you said that you learned to accept yourself from the very beginning. What kind of changes do you hope to see in the public conversation about self-acceptance and inclusivity?
Oh, yes. I think that powerful people, or maybe the government or politicians, they may not want to empower each individual in the country, because then their position can be threatened. But we have to talk about self-empowerment, that everybody's valuable and everybody can achieve many things with knowledge, because the only difference of a person, I think, is what people know. And if you know how to do business or how to work in a certain situation or environment, they can achieve it. But education or information are taken away and kept hidden. And for example, maybe if you want to get like a university degree or master of business degree, it's very, very expensive. It's being made inaccessible. So these type of education and information, I think we have to really make it accessible for many people. And this type of encouragement that we can all achieve anything.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Should be talked about even more.
And you think it has to come from a top-down approach from the government to spread the awareness and spread to the people through education?
I think education is not only coming from government or schools, but it can come from this type of podcast or magazines or social media, because people only want to teach what they think is not going to lose, you know? And we have to pay attention to many sources of resources so that we are not only learning from one. For example, when I was in school, I never learned to make a company in middle school or high school. We didn't learn how to do tax. We didn't learn about basic laws. We didn't learn about human rights. We didn't learn about how to raise our voice and tackle difficult situations at business or politics, because the school doesn't really want to teach it, maybe. I think there is like a manipulation history that government doesn't choose to teach. Yeah. So I think we have to learn from many people and many sources outside of school also.
And do you think like this comes with increased empowerment of LGBTQIA people in Japan and Asia?
Yes, I think for me, I felt empowered because I was educated in the US, and this kind of awareness, I brought it back to Japan. And I'm one of the few, not many people are open in Japan. There are, of course, LGBTQ activists who are out and proud, but still many people are hidden and in closet. I think the existence of internet and people being bilingual or trilingual has allowed especially LGBTQ people to learn about what's happening outside Japan. Because when you see what's happening outside Japan, we see the problem that we had, that LGBTQ people didn't feel value of themselves. So it's not only LGBTQ people, but being connected to the international society, I think, has really empowered Japanese people to fortify themselves. So I would like to, encourage people to travel and learn English and start reading not only Japanese translated materials, but other sources as
well. Keep learning, right? Keep widening your perspectives, keep widening your pool of knowledge, and just looking at different sources of information. I think that's the best way to understand what's out there and not be too close-minded about what's happening in the world. So how do you think that your Buddhist teachings have complemented your LGBTQ plus advocacy?
Yes, Buddhism really encourages anyone to be themselves. Some of the teachings that I really love is A Song of the Moonlight. It says, just like the moonlight shines onto the whole town, everybody can decide to look up to the moon and appreciate the beauty. Just like that, the mercy of Buddha welcomes everybody and enlightens anyone. And when this was written, there were, sex workers were not treated with respect, and criminals were also not respected. So there are some like folk tales in the book that the founder of the school really welcomed these people, and they felt very welcome. So when I was reading these stories, I felt that, I might be a homosexual, but it does not matter. Anybody can be enlightened. So this kind of teaching really validates my actions and what I say.
So what personally is a priority for you in your life right now? Like, what are your main focuses right now?
I have one for my work and one for my private life. Work-wise, I just signed a management contract with an agency in New York. So I'm excited to expand my advocacy, not only in Japan or Asia, but also maybe Europe or any places that I couldn't reach just with my hands. So I'm excited to see how I can be a better spokesperson for LGBTQ people and anybody who are in vulnerable communities. And my private side, my husband from Colombia just moved here last October. So now we are in February. So I think it's just 4 months that he moved here. So there are many struggles with languages and cultures, and he's growing a lot. So I also feel like a mother. So I really want to nourish my family and grow in many aspects. Yeah, but we are very windy people. We love to travel and move around, and that really fuels our energy. So I would love to keep traveling with him throughout our lives.
So you say you just signed with a talent agency in New York. What would you say is your dream speaking gig?
Ooh, I think I would love to speak to Drew Barrymore on the Drew Show on TV.
That would be cool.
Because I already spoke at United Nations and I'm speaking at Harvard. So next, I think it will be more about collaborating with another speaker. Drew Barrymore was an actress who really showed me how to be honest with my emotions when I was very quiet and reserved. When she screams or when she cries in the movies, I wasn't able to do these things. I felt that it's a shame to show our emotions because of the Japanese culture, reservedness or humility. I didn't really like that. So for me, she's the epitome of being who you are.
I love that. Okay. So what's something that you believed 5 years ago that you no longer know is true?
Yes. I believe that working hard beyond my limit was good. And it's still considered a virtue in Japan. Working without sleeping, sacrificing yourself for others. But now I don't believe in this because I exceeded the limit too much and I felt that I was fighting for what, you know? So now I have family to spend time with. If I'm not spending time for something that's productive, it's okay because it's maybe soothing or nourishing. So I was able to find beauty in non-productive work moments. Mm.
So just like you said that you have pushed yourself to the limit before and that kind of had a negative impact on your health, right? Was there a period where you were really burnt out?
Yes, I felt like I was never enough. I felt that I was in a constant marathon and that's not really fun. I also want to travel and relax and I think because of the Japanese history of losing the World War II and people needed to recuperate and work hard without breaks and everybody needed to conform into one mold. That is not the reality anymore. And even if you work harder and harder, it doesn't mean that the success is guaranteed or happiness is guaranteed at this moment. So I decided to look for other options of happiness, and that balance, I think, was something that I didn't know 5 years ago.
So what are the options of happiness now? How do you achieve happiness? And are you happy right now?
Yes, I'm much happier. I didn't think I would enjoy playing Mario Wonder. It's really fun. Watching movies, eating ice cream. Walking in the nature, swimming, traveling, going to different like restaurants. Before I would go to the gym almost every day and eat vegetables, and I didn't play video games or board games. I felt that was like waste of time, but it actually is really fun. So just seeing the smiles of my loved ones, and that is not bad. I learned.
And what would be your best advice for people who are either building their own brand or who want to be their own brand just like you?
My advice? Oh, I think if you use what you are born with, in my case, I grew up in a temple, I'm homosexual, so I didn't really create something from scratch. It was something that I was already endowed with since I was born. So utilizing what's kind of unique or special about me was a way for me to create my own brand. And wearing makeup or heels was something that I was naturally attracted to since when I was like 2 or 3 years old. So just do something that's authentic to you. I think that is a fun and easy way to navigate yourself.
So you would say that is your strength, right? What about your weakness? Is there one thing that you would be super excited to delegate to someone else, or would you say is your biggest weakness?
Well, there are so many weaknesses. I'm not really good with numbers. I'm not really good with business strategies. Oh, you know what? Because I'm a Buddhist monk, I felt that it's sinful to want to make money. And I really didn't want to sell products or think about earning money, because I felt that was a tainted desire. Yeah. So I decided to kind of work for people who are not suffering with money issues. Maybe people who are abundant and people who need to spend money. These are the people who I don't feel too guilty receiving money from, and giving or providing something for equality or respect, this kind of education or information. I think it's something that I don't really feel guilty about, because it's only helping. I don't really like when some business brands create a need that was not there before, like saying, oh, you have too many pores, or you have to look this way, or the nose has to look this way, and take money from people who are saving money for everyday lives. That made me feel terrible. But if you are giving or earning from somebody who does not, who needs to spend, I think it's a little bit better. So this type of Buddhist curses that doesn't allow me to think flexibly, maybe is my weakness.
I like that, actually. Okay. And this show is all about unexpected stories of people that we may not know about. What do people not know or find surprising about you or your journey?
Well, I think people find it surprising that a monk can wear makeup and heels and be a homosexual and be married to a Colombian husband. I think this already is very surprising. But this was possible because I was born in 1989 to parents who studied Buddhism, who studied in Germany. I was able to study in New York. My parents are very accepting and aware of LGBTQ issues. And Buddhism is something alive that keeps evolving. It's very different depending on where in the history you find it. So I want people to be a little bit open-minded and find hope that things that we thought were very heavy and traditional and unstable can also change. And I think I would love to be a modern spiritual leader who helps people to emancipate themselves from shackles that they had on their feet.
Your parents sound very progressive. I mean, they're in a traditional field in the sense that they run a temple. They believe in Buddhism. But they also are very progressive in the way that they are so open to accepting different perspectives and different lifestyles and accepting you for who you are, right? They've never pressured you, it sounds like it. Who would you say is your biggest role model growing up? Was it your parents?
Oh, my biggest role model maybe was Sailor Moon. Because, she's kind of clumsy when she's not in Sailor Moon mode, but she fights for what's right and she is driven by love and compassion and she doesn't give up. So, and she's beautiful and, wearing makeup and nice costumes. So she was my role model. But as a real life living example, I really like my mother for allowing me to believe in myself. And just like the quote that I said in the beginning, that, nobody can really determine your life and you have to make your decision based on what you feel. One thing that I really liked from her is that she said, even if I, your mother, tell you to do something, if you don't believe that it's the right way, just don't listen to me and just do your way.
Wow.
And that was really brave. And I was like, oh, okay. So, she really inspires me. And I would like to circulate this type of liberation message to the listeners.
Oh, I really like that. Amazing mother that you have there.
Yeah.
So I think that's a really great place for us to end today's conversation. Thank you so much, Kodo, for joining us on Crazy Smart Asia. It's been a great conversation just getting to know you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much.
That's it for yet another episode of Crazy Smart Asia. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Don't forget to follow us wherever you're listening to this. Crazy Smart Asia is produced by Josie Kota and edited, mixed, and mastered by Ben Beheshti. Genty's digital editor is Valerie Lim. Crazy Smart Asia is hosted by me, Chong Xiao Wei. In the meantime, do remember,
my mom told me, somebody tell you how to live your life, but if you follow them and fail, people are not going to take responsibilities for what they told you. So follow your heart only.
See you next week.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.